This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.
My name is Ed Keeley, and in this, our final episode of the series, we look at what the future might hold for the North Bull Island. We will speak about the importance of education and examine how some of the difficulties facing the island's wildlife might be resolved. When Father Kennedy wrote his book, An Irish Sanctuary, in 1953, the threat of development still hung over the island, and thankfully that has receded, but other issues still face the island and its wild inhabitants.
It would be a crying shame if this ideal sanctuary were destroyed, and if we, as naturalists, were to allow such vandalism to pass without protest. Mummius, the Roman general who, in the year 146 BC, sacked the Greek city of Corinth, is held up to ridicule by historians for his lack of appreciation of the art treasures that are in the city. These works of art were unique and priceless. Some, perhaps, the sole surviving works of Greek masters. Yet Mummius, when entrusting them to the captain of a ship for transport to Rome, stipulated that if they were lost on the way, they should be replaced by works of equal value. Now, our bird sanctuary, if destroyed, cannot be replaced. No more than the Greek works in ivory and gold, in bronze and marble and terracotta, by master hands that were long stilled in death, could be replaced. There is no spot on our coast from Fairhead to Carnsore Point that can take the place of the North Bull, which is unique in this country.
The Irish hare, once an animal synonymous with the Bull Island, now sadly faces extinction from the nature reserve. I accompanied naturalist Tom Cooney on an early morning trip to the island to catch a glimpse of what may be the last Irish hares on the North Bull.
Okay, 4:15 a.m. So we're gonna have an early start this morning. I'm gonna meet Tom and we're gonna go down to the Bull Island very early, before as the sun rises, before anybody else really gets down. Just it's a better time to go and see some of the wildlife, some of the mammals, particularly foxes and hares. So I'm looking forward to seeing it now. I've never been down this early in the morning, so I'm excited to see how it is. Okay, quick cup of tea before I go, waking myself up a bit. Obviously the first one's here.
No one else mad enough to come down this early morning. So now we're on our way down towards the top of the island. And this is the part of the island that really becomes interesting, because we're absolutely the first people, certainly, to be coming down to the island. But you can see it's just a beautiful place to be. Normally it's darker. What time is it now? It's 4:41 a.m. And it's actually bright enough to actually look around and see everything. It's a really, really bright morning. But what we have to do is we have to start going quietly from here on in. Because this is the time you can get to see foxes and hares. The rabbits are usually around, but you'll see them most of the time, but for the more unusual or scarcer of the animals of the island, this is the only time to see them. And if you're trying to survey them, or you're trying to find out how many there are, this is your only opportunity. Come down very early in the morning when there's no one around. Once people begin to appear, and there's a lot of activity, all these animals disappear. They go off into their usual hiding areas of the island, their little secret areas where they're not going to be disturbed. And so if you really want to see anything, you have to come down. You have to come down before the sun comes up, quite literally, and then wait for the sun. But hopefully now there'll be something to see.
So we're going to go up to a small area of gorse and mixed vegetation, woody vegetation, bit of scrub. Well, my reckoning is there's probably just two hares left on the island, and they're just ahead of us now on the left hand side. Just a small flock of curlew feeding out on the grassland, and just beyond that on the left there's two hares, and they're the only two hares that I've seen this year. Last year there were eight for sure. I was speaking to the groundsmen, they've only seen one, and they're here all the time, and I've been walking around all the other areas. They could well be still eight animals. And look, isn't that beautiful? Look at, there's two hares on that side, and just beyond them, fraction to the right, the sun is peeping just above the horizon. Look at that. Don't look through the glasses at the binocular at the sun coming up, but isn't that beautiful?
That's absolutely spectacular. And you said like you've got a half a dozen curlews just in front of those as well.
There's a flock of curlew probably from Northern Europe. Just beyond them, we've two of the last of the Irish hares left on the island. And the sunrise is just coming up now. It's beginning to blind us actually now, but that's absolutely beautiful. So what we'll do is we'll walk over to the side and we'll try and get a slightly closer view of these hares. I found my notebooks yesterday, and I was looking at the ones from early 1970s, and that's when I used to come down here bird watching first, but generally just looking at nature first. And I used to count the hares that I saw on the island, which is kind of an unusual thing for young teenagers to do, but I did it because I was fascinated by the numbers of them. And some of the numbers I would find, particularly in springtime when they're larger and they're more visible, I'd get 30 and 40 hares in a group, in a kind of scattered group together in different parts of the island. And I reckon myself there's somewhere between 50 and 100 hares on the island that I could estimate. And here we are too, all on the southern end of the island, down towards Bull Wall. There's none left. Not that I could find. I've walked through there lots of times this year and never come to the northern end, and the same spot all the time, just two hares. And that, just the consistency of coming down, how often you come down, chances are they're the only two left. And they'll usually disappear now as soon as they catch sight of us, but if we sneak up we might get a bit closer. It must be your first time to see two together, is it?
First time to see two, well, since I was a kid.
Yeah. We'll walk really slowly over here because the hares are just out of sight behind a small little hill here. So if we walk very, very quietly, we might just get a little closer without frightening them too much. So we just go very slowly and very, very quietly. The wind, we're actually in the wrong position for the wind. They might get our scent for us, but...
It's blowing behind us.
Yeah, it's not good, but they'll be just about 100 yards ahead of us here now. And of course, it's the one morning I didn't bring my camera. It's always the same. I think this is the closest I've got to them for all year. They're probably even gone. Just before that small hummock on that side. Yeah. Okay, well, we're not going to get a great view of them because the sun is so it's in a direct line with them. But we won't try to disturb them too much. But that's the last two, and it's a shame, really, isn't it? Really, because it's a great shame that a species that was always iconic with the island. When I was young, everyone knew there were hares on the island. Everyone. People didn't know anything about nature knew there was hares, because when you come onto the island, you would see groups of them charging along the salt marsh, along the edges of the golf courses. And now you have to come at this hour of the morning. The sun is just barely above the horizon. It's your only chance to see two hares on the island. And these are part of a reintroduction in 1995. So the original hares are gone, presumably. There they are. They're running across the fairway now. Look at it. You can tell them from rabbits very, very easily. Just the size of them, the large hind legs, the big ears. And they're always out in the open like this. You see them? They're sitting over there now just watching us. They obviously heard me talking. They don't like this kind of thing going on. But still, they're sitting there now, nice and quiet. But as I say, years ago you'd see them everywhere, and it's a great shame that there's only two left, because when you miss it, when you begin to lose species from a nature reserve, and you begin to lose species from a biosphere reserve, it should be like a traffic light system. There is a traffic light system, in fact, for conservation of, you know, green, everything's okay,
amber, you know, get ready to put on the brakes, kind of thing, something's not right, and red, jam on the brakes, there's something seriously wrong. And there's something seriously wrong in the nature reserve when you have two hares left out of what was once an iconic species on the island. The problem, and I was reading one of my older books last night, and I came across a comment about the hares on the island, and it identified even 15 years ago, maybe 20 years ago this book was, and it was saying that the constant harassment by dogs in the nature reserve was the major problem. And so it's not a secret what the issue is. So there's no point now in anyone trapping hares from some other part of the country and putting them here to kind of window dress the situation and make it look nice. That's not going to work. It's not fair to the hares because you're condemning them to death, really. Kind of very slow death, because they're never going to survive.
You mentioned about the hares. You see them because they do spend a lot of their time out in the open, and that's part of their problem, because a lot, unlike rabbits, they don't burrow, so they're always kind of bit more exposed.
That's absolutely right. They're out in the open. They're grazers. They're herbivores. They graze on the grasses. And if you just think about this, the shape, the very shape of a hare, it's long legs at the back and shorter ones in the front. If ever you see them running, they're very fast, and they run on open ground. They're not like rabbits. Rabbits can dive into a hole and get away from danger. Hares have actually developed the strategy of running faster than the predator that's chasing it, and that's what they've done. So they have nowhere to go. I mean, they're out in the open, they're exposed, and that's it. Like, you know, when there's a lot of activity on the island, they'll go out onto the edge of the salt marsh. And I mean the edge, I mean the very edge. You'll see them out where the tide is, and they'll usually go to where there's made the little inlets and little runnels full of water when the tide is in, and no animals, no dogs can get to them. I mean, it's a tragedy that these lovely animals have to actually pick the most isolated little spots in the island to survive. It's not right. They should be free to roam in the nature reserve.
Pat Corrigan manages the Bull Islands Interpretive Centre. I talked to Pat about his experience of working on the island and the importance of education in the efforts to conserve the island's rich habitats and wildlife.
Okay, can I just start by getting you to introduce yourself, please, first?
I'm Pat Corrigan. I work here in the North Bull Island for Dublin City Council. My job is to manage the island here, both the nature conservation end and the amenity end. It is a very important amenity for the people of Dublin, but it's also a very, very important ecological area, and there are various conservation measures in place to look after the island here. It is a state nature reserve, which means it's fully protected under the 1976 Wildlife Act, plus other legislation that comes from Europe. And I suppose it's possibly the most protected piece of land in the country. The island is also an NHA and an SAC, Scientific Area of Conservation. And above all, the island here is a UNESCO Biosphere Reserve.
And can I ask you, that is there sometimes a conflict between the status as an amenity, and an important amenity that lots of people use, and its status as a UNESCO Biosphere Reserve, Nature Reserve, all these designations?
Well, the whole ethos of UNESCO is that the indigenous people would have a say in what happens here and have the use of the place. We recognise that it is a very, very important area as regards to the wildlife we have here on the island. But it is, as I say, an important area for amenity, and it's our job to balance, to manage that very thin line, if you like, between conservation and amenity use of the island. Yes, conflict, we've always conflict, but that's part of our job, is to protect the island as best we can. And that's what the Interpretive Centre here is all about. It's kind of, you know, conservation through education. And people that come into the centre here and have a look around and speak to the staff have a better appreciation for what's going on around them when they go for their walk or go for their jog or walking dogs or whatever.
So I guess education is going to be the way forward as far as maybe having people behave in the right way on the reserve.
That's correct, yeah. I mean, if you take a nature reserve of maybe 40 years ago, most likely you'd find a fence up around it, a nature reserve keep out. But thankfully the tide has turned, and that's what we're saying through the Interpretive Centre. Come in and learn about what we have around us here. And by and large, it's amazing that people that come through the doors here, how little they actually know about the island. And I think it makes their stay here a lot more enjoyable.
And you mentioned disturbance. Is disturbance a big problem on the Bull Island as far as, you know, development and as far as maintaining the species that we already have?
Compared to other places, we're 3 miles from the centre of our capital city, which incidentally is unique worldwide. We would have a million visits to the island here each year. So yes, of course, it's going to be disturbance. Now, again, it's all about education. Dogs, yeah, are a problem on the island here. Dogs off the leash. Now, they don't have to be hunting dogs, just your family pet chasing around the place. If I can give you one instance, a brown goose, for instance, has to eat a third of its own body weight every day just for survival. Now, that's without building up brown fat for your stored fat, if you like, for migration. So a dog off a leash chasing a flock of brent geese from one end of the estuary to the other, that could be the difference in some of those birds making it back to the high Arctic or dying en route. So that's the kind of disturbance that we would have on the mudflat and salt marsh end of things. Again, it's through education. We're trying to educate people that they must keep their dog on a leash at all times on the island here. There's plenty. You'll have the rest of Dublin to run their dogs off leash, but I don't think a lot of people don't understand that the actual damage that they're causing to the different habitats with their dogs running around the place.
You've been here for 27 years.
Yeah.
How rewarding has it been? Like, that's probably my dream job. How rewarding has it been to be here for that long and to get to know the island as intimately, I suppose, as you have done?
Well, yes, 27 years here, and it's just something to look forward to each day as you come down the causeway there, just to even see a sunrise over the bay here. There's not many people appreciate that. I love working with the schools that come through here. I love working especially with the third level students, and as you can see there, the bookshelf there is almost full with theses that were carried out by third level students here, and it's just a joy to help them out. And the junior schools then, they're just absolutely great crack, just to deal with them, and I suppose when they come here, it's a fun experience as well as learning. And I think that's very, very important for that age group. And it's wonderful when a school leaves here and the following week in the post, you get maybe 30 or 40 little drawings and just what they learnt about the place. And it's just amazing. Like, you know, we're going through the stuff day in, day out. And it's just amazing what children pick up on. And it's just wonderful to keep it fresh, that stops you being burnt out and that kind of thing, because you're getting the feedback from the children. It's just wonderful.
Across the wooden bridge, above the flotillas of seabird and duck, under the swooping squadrons, I go to you to say goodbye. How many years have you given me sanctuary? How often have I stumbled across to you, holding my mind like an aching limb, and lain among your grasses, and walked your sands, under the thunder of surf-vanquished despair, and my heart was hopeful with the song of the birds. Have you no other lovers, that men should heap excrement upon you, banish your birds and bury you, in a vault of stone and iron?
Kevin Faller wrote his poem during the period where the island was used for a time by Dublin Corporation as a city dump. But attitudes about the management of the island have changed, and with plans to promote the island as a UNESCO Biosphere Reserve and to build a new state-of-the-art interpretive centre, I spoke to Leslie Moore, Dublin City Council's Park Superintendent, about the future of the island.
My name is Les Moore. I'm the Head of Park Services for Dublin City Council, and the Bull Island is one of our public parks, probably one of our most important public parks, but it's also a nature reserve. And we manage that from the point of view of the recreational activities there, the use of the beach, but also the nature conservation aspects, which we work very closely with the National Parks and Wildlife Service.
And can you tell me, the island has all kinds of protections on it now, and I suppose one of the most important ones is that it's a UNESCO Biosphere Reserve. Can you tell me about that classification and why the island got it?
Well, it's got a UNESCO designation since 1981, so it was one of the very first biospheres that was designated by UNESCO. And it's designated because of the very important range of habitats that are on the island. It's fair to say, I think, that we haven't really been using that designation to promote the island, but we have decided to do that. And in fact, UNESCO have written to us saying whether we want to retain the designation, and if so, we need to put certain things in place, such as updating our management plan and setting up governance structures in terms of community engagement. So we're looking at all these issues at the moment.
You have your own management plan in place since 2009, and I guess that identified some problems maybe with stuff like bait digging and dogs off leashes. Is there any plans to maybe step up the process of correcting some of those problems?
Well, these are difficult things to deal with. The bait digging probably lies more in the remit of the National Parks and Wildlife Service. The dogs off leash, I think there's issues with dogs, dog fouling and dogs off leash in throughout the city. I don't think it's unique to the Bull Island, but obviously we have important conservation objectives there. But what we hope over a period of time is to work with dog owners. I think in the past we've adopted a kind of an enforcement role, but what I want to do into the future is to work with dog owners and see if we can resolve some of the issues that are arising out there and get them involved in the conservation as well, because I think fundamentally everybody wants to see the wildlife and the habitats on the island conserved. So it's a matter of working with people to see how we can achieve that.
There's a few species, the Irish hare in particularly, which is, you know, particularly susceptible. It looks like the hare will disappear off the island. I think there's only a couple of individuals left. Maybe, do you think if people knew the kind of problems that the dogs were causing, that they would correct their behaviour, I suppose?
I think they would, and it's a matter of again, not everyone appreciates the importance of the island or the value of it. I don't think there's probably not any hares left at this stage. We haven't recorded any for a while. There's perhaps a couple, but they're very scarce. But there would be an opportunity to reintroduce them again. But we would need to work with people, because people are part of the management out there. It's not possible for Dublin City Council to manage everything ourselves. We may have had that approach in the past. So what we need to do is work with people, and for the people and the local population there to help in the conservation of the island.
I guess moving into the future, the population of Dublin is set to grow hugely in the next maybe 20, 30 years. So the problem of disturbance and the island coming under pressure is going to increase. So if we don't have these systems in place, the problem might get worse. You know, so we've lost like breeding species like ring plover and little tern, which is, you know, it's a bit sad for a nature reserve.
Yeah, it is. But and I suppose, you know, we're looking to work with a range of other partners such as Fingal and Dunleary, because they do have terns on Dalkey Island and other places. So it's a matter of sharing information, sharing knowledge, and seeing how perhaps we can work to reintroduce some of these species again. If we provide the conditions whereby those species might come back, then there's an onus on us to try and do that. And I think we can, if we can engage people in those projects. I firmly believe it's a matter of working with people, and that and people want to see these things in their community. Dublin, the Bull Island is in Dublin City. It's part of Dublin City. It's part of our capital city. And it's actually absolutely unique for a capital city to have a nature reserve like the Bull Island within a capital city. And I think we need to get that across to people, get them to respect that much more, but also to use it for the recreational activities that they do at the moment.
Finally, I spoke to Tom Cooney about the island's future, the problems it faces, and how they might be resolved.
Well, we're here at the very northern tip of the island, just opposite Hotead. It's a growing tip of the island, and it's an area where sand collects, an expanse of sand and shingle, broken up shells collect. And for over 100 years we had two species of bird nesting here. One was a resident bird called the ring plover, and the other one was a bird that came up from Africa called the little tern. And they would lay their eggs directly onto the sand. There was no nest as such constructed in the way people normally think. And the problem with that was the eggs are camouflaged. And when people walk up here, they trample the eggs. In the mid-1980s, we had a very successful conservation scheme where we had 88 pairs of little tern nesting successfully. And we had about five or six, maybe seven pairs of ringed plover. Now, these birds have been coming here for over 100 years. That conservation scheme was abandoned for absolutely no reason, or no reason was ever given. And since then, the birds have abandoned the site. It was simply a temporary summer measure. We'd block off the area, we'd have people manning the site, explain to the public what's going on, and we had great support. At that time, the little tern colony here was the biggest in Ireland. It was really successful and had great support. There's no reason why that couldn't be done again in the future, because this is a nature reserve, and it's typical of the sort of issues that are here in the island. The island is continually being used by amenity activities, whether it's windsurfing or sand kite surfing or just people walking into areas that perhaps are causing damage. They don't realise they're causing damage. So it's really important, I think, for the future of the island that conservation of the island, its habitats and species is the absolute only major priority. And people are certainly allowed to use it, but there should be restrictions to certain areas at certain times of the year. And that's all that's really required. Really, it's you know, it simply takes a policy decision and saying, look, we're putting nature and wildlife first. For the past 100 years, people have been fighting to save this place. And when people come down here, they wonder and they marvel at it and they think it's fantastic, which it is. But they don't realise of the struggle, the 100 years of struggle that's gone on to keep it like this. And that, unfortunately, might be the same for the future unless conservation measures are put first. We want it so that in 50 or 100 years time or 200 years time, when the population of Dublin is 2 million or 3 million, this is an absolute jewel in the crown. This is the place to come to see wildlife. But if we don't start managing it now, we will lose it. There's no question. We've already lost two species. I've just mentioned the ringed plover and the little tern. We're going to lose a lot more. And these are iconic species, much the same as the Irish hare. There's possibly two animals left out of hundreds. So we really need to take stock of what's happening and reverse what's happening. You have to reverse it because the island has a great future. The recent changes, for example, to the way we look at some of the status of some of our birds in Ireland has increased the importance of the island. Normally we look at wildlife here on the island, we look at birds, wintering birds, geese, ducks and wading birds. These are the most common thing people see. The land birds are generally ignored. But recent changes to what we call the Boards of Conservation Concern in Ireland is the way we categorise them, whether they're endangered, whether they're at risk, or so on. In a publication in 2013, a species was identified called the meadow pipit as being a species of high conservation concern. In other words, we need to really be careful about this species and watch it and see what's happening, because its population in the short term has decreased dramatically in Ireland in the past 15 years or so. The monitoring has shown that there's a major decrease. On the island here, we have over 150 breeding territories. So the island is not just known now for its wintering birds, its breeding birds are absolutely critically important. Here on the middle of Dublin Bay, we have a species of high conservation concern in very large numbers in a natural habitat. If we interfere with that natural habitat, we're going to endanger it even further. We also have another one here called a tufted duck, which has only recently colonised the island. That's another species of high conservation concern. So the island has two breeding species of high conservation concern. It also have what we call amber species. These are ones that are medium conservation concern. There's at least 12 of those nest on the island. So we need to start looking away just from the geese and the more obvious things. And we need to recognise the whole island now is of critical importance. It is actually a sanctuary in the real sense. It's an island sanctuary. It's a refuge. It's an island refuge for everything now. And as the population continues to grow and the landscape continues to change for the future, we have to look at these natural areas and leave them alone, but manage them sensitively for the future. Otherwise, we won't be forgiven by future generations for wasting it.
This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.